let's start the insanity. Giddy up.
New York Bozo! New York Bozo!
I couldn't resist because we all know that I am an idiot, but the Packers do close out the season with a road win in Chicago, 35-16, the final score, and yes, clinching a first round bye and a home field advantage. I might just be a little bit loopy here because my partner busted her butt painting the doors in our house today, so I'm breathing in paint fumes. Also means that our doors are all ajar, so she gets to hear adult man child talking into a microphone about a children's ball game. I am that adult man child, Zach Rapport, at Zach Rapport on Twitter. Follow the show at the APC Pod. This is the APC Podcast, our rapid recap show. We are two schlitz to the wind here, moments after the final whistle. I am joined once again, my trusty sidekick here, slash boss. That's a little bit of a weird sentiment. Tex Western, how are you doing, man?
feeling good. I am very glad that the Packers don't have to worry about playing on what's going to be a ridiculous wild card weekend next weekend. So yeah, they took care of business. It looked for a little bit like they were going to get a little bit of help from Seattle. But the Seahawks ended up figuring their own crap out and going on to win against San Francisco. So the Packers needed it today to clinch that one seed. And they, again, looked a little hairy for Green Bay too until early in the fourth quarter, but they figured it out very, very well in those last 15 minutes. So I'm in pretty good spirits.
You and I, speaking of the Seahawks, we're chatting in the middle of the game, and I believe I said something like, "Has anyone ever checked in on a Seahawks game midway through and had it be a normal score, like 14-7 or something?" I checked in at some point in the third quarter, I believe, and it was 16-6 because of course it was.
Yeah, and then it went to 16-12 right after because of a missed PAT, I think.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, Seattle cannot play a normal game. That's just completely impossible for them.
Seattle. Well, was this a normal game for the Packers? I feel like it was a normal Packers-Bears game in that the game started out exactly as annoying as I thought it was going to be. There was the kickoff bullshit that was took, you know, it was like, no time had elapsed, and we had already spent 10 minutes talking to Dean Blandino, and there were injuries in the first couple game minutes. I don't know. Did you get that same impression where a couple minutes in and you're like, I'm already annoyed at this game?
Oh yeah, absolutely. The opening kickoff where it looked pretty clear to me that Cordell Patterson touched the ball before his foot went out of bounds. That really just sort of set the stage for what was going to be kind of an agonizing, just frustrating day from a, you know, just an all around game that you knew was going to make your blood boil a little bit, even if the Packers were going to find a way to win.
Yeah. Can you explain it to me like I'm 5 years old, to quote Michael Scott? the whole thing with it, Patterson, he slid, he got his foot out of bounds intentionally before he touched the ball. Is that why that was a penalty?
That's what they ruled, is that he touched his foot to the sideline before touching the football. It's the same thing that Randall Cobb's done and Ty Montgomery did several years ago, where if you are touching the out of bounds line, even if the ball is in play and the body is out of bounds and you touch the football, that means that the ball is technically out of bounds and it goes for a kickoff out of bounds penalty and you get the ball at the 40. So it's a clever thing to do if you can do it right. Patterson, I really thought, screwed it up and should have cost his team 39 yards of field position, but they ruled that he, you know, touched the sideline before touching the football, which, yeah, that really set the stage for just some weirdness, throughout the first half, especially in this game.
I feel like it's small potatoes for the competition committee. They've got bigger fish to fry, but they should change that rule. Come on.
It's a weird loophole. And yeah, you see it maybe once or twice a year where it kind of comes into play, where some astute return guy remembers that, oh yeah, if I step my feet out of bounds and touch the ball, I'll get myself 35 yards of field position.
Yeah, it's one of those, like, it's not the kicker's fault. I don't know. It just feels lame.
Yeah, agreed. But what are you going to do?
Yeah, what are you going to do? What's Aaron Rodgers going to do? He's going to throw a bunch of touchdowns and maybe win an MVP. You think he sealed it up here?
Yeah, it's done as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I think he needed a bad game to blow his chance at the MVP. I think the Packers needed to lose, them not get the one seed, and him to not play well for that to happen. Obviously, that did not happen. He might have set, I'd have to run the numbers, but it's possible that if not for MVS's drop of a wide open, should have been a touchdown, he might have actually beat his passer rating record from 2011. One of these days I'll figure out, if he had converted that, what that would have put it at. As it was, I think he passed Peyton Manning for the second highest passer rating in a season in NFL history.
Yep.
So Rodgers now owns the top two marks in that category, which is pretty damn impressive.
And the fourth, I think he's first, second, and fourth. Yeah.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. Aaron Rodgers is 19 of 24, 240 yards, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. I mean, just like what a cap on the season. One of those touchdowns going to Devontae Adams, speaking of stellar seasons. And I believe he tied Sterling Sharpe's franchise record for 18 touchdowns. Is that right?
That's right. And he did pass Sharpe for most receptions in a single season in Packers history, too. He got the 3 that he needed to set that record. So kudos to Devontae for a very big day in the record books. And, it was a little bit of a quiet day by his standards, but I tweeted right before the touchdown drive to start the fourth quarter when the Packers went on that nice long drive. I tweeted out, all right, it's Devontae time, just because you know that they were going to start feeding him the football and find ways to get it to him in key situations. And I think he got 2 or 3 third down receptions on that drive that kept the chains moving and eventually got into the end zone.
Yeah. So big congratulations as well to Devontae Adams. By the way, so he passes Sterling Sharpe, who is a guy who, in my childhood memory, I feel like that's a player that, like, he only played for like 2.5 seasons and his career was cut short by injury. But, like, you're the trivia guy. I don't know the answer, but I know it's a lot. How many years he actually played? Is it like 8? How many years did he play on the Packers?
He made it 7 seasons.
7 seasons.
So, yeah, he was drafted in 1988 and then had to retire after the 94 season. Yeah. So 2 years of 1,400 yards. His record-setting seasons were actually in 93 and 94. 93, he had the 112 receptions to set the team record, and then he had the 18 touchdowns in 94, his last season. But, yeah, that's a guy who, if he had not had the neck injury and played another, probably only needed another 2 or 3 years in the league at the clip that he was going to probably make his case for a Hall of Fame career. I think you can still make a little bit of an argument for it.
Yeah.
I mean, in those 7 years, he had 5 Pro Bowls and 3 first team All Pros.
Yeah.
That's absurd.
Yeah.
So,
well, and now,
alas,
Devontae Adams is, counted with him in a number of categories. But let's talk about the running game, which had less success in this game. Aaron Jones with 11 carries for just 42 yards. That's 3.8 yards a carry. Did have that touchdown late. Williams comes in for 5 carries for 26 yards. That's 5.2 yards per carry, although that's a little misleading. He had a 15-yard carry at the end of the game. For the most part, I mean, the Packers came in. They tried to run outside with Jones. Didn't work. They tried to run inside with Jones. It didn't work. Is this just a case of the Bears' run defense being really good, or what's going on there?
Well, there was a bunch of crazy things that happened in this game, right? So the Packers' first 3 touchdown drives, one of them was a 12-play, 80-yard drive. The next drive was 3 plays and 83 yards because Rodgers hits MVS for a 72-yard touchdown. And then the third drive comes after the Packers recover a fumble, and they only end up going 22 yards for a touchdown. So the Packers only ran 21 plays as of the end of the first half, but they were up 21 to 13, I think, at halftime.
21-13 at halftime, yes, with the field
goal. Yeah. So some of this was just possession driven. They actually had some decent gains. Jones was, as long as they weren't running him with like the toss plays to the very edge, if they were kind of running off tackle and some of the outside zone stuff, they were actually finding some room on the edge. But Yeah, it just with the possessions being so choppy, the offense really never got into a rhythm. I mean, they had 44 plays from scrimmage in this game on offense. The Bears ran 74 plays.
Yeah.
And the Packers win 35-16. So there's, again, turnovers play a factor in there, and the couple of explosive plays, especially, again, the big one to MVS that went for 72 yards and a touchdown.
Yeah. The Bears ran 74 plays, and 39 of them were fourth downs. Fun fact.
Man, it sure felt like it, though. Gosh, the Packers did a great job on third downs. I mean, they held them to 6 of 15, which is pretty darn good. Maybe a little bit above Chicago's season average, but then they allowed 5 of 6 on fourth downs. But thankfully, you know, they got that big one late with the, was it Chandon Sullivan, I think, who had could have had the pick, but dropped it, but it ended up being perfectly fine. So, that was definitely one of those things that just makes you pull your hair out as a Packers fan.
Yeah. Do you think any of the run struggles had to do with David Bakhtiari not playing in this game? And we didn't pod during the week here, but Bakhtiari suffering a non-contact ACL tear during practice. He is out. Didn't play in this game. They shuffled Turner back. How did you think the offensive line fared in this game? And did that affect the running game at all?
Yeah, for the most part, I thought they were okay. Fundamentally, Chicago just is a very good run defense, and especially when they have Akeem Hicks on the field. He was out the last time these two teams played, and that was a big reason, I think, why the Packers were able to have such a great day running the football in that first meeting. So with Hicks back, you know, still having Khalil Mack on the edge, that's going to be a tough matchup no matter what. So certainly Bakhtiari being out didn't help, but I think... You know, with Turner, I think he generally provides a little bit more as a run blocker than a pass blocker anyway. So the fact that Rodgers was only sacked once really didn't seem to be under a ton of pressure most of the night. I think that certainly goes down as a, you know, at least a good performance under some less than stellar circumstances for the offensive line.
Yeah, I feel like that may be a good omen going into a bye week, getting ready for the playoffs here.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be important for Rick Wagner, because the fact that he was able to play and start and play every snap was astounding, considering the fact that he got carted off the field last week. So him being in there, I think, was huge. So getting another week for him to rest up and you know, make sure his knee is 100% or as close to it by the divisional round, that's going to be a big help as well.
Yeah. So Jamal Williams is back for this game, and then suddenly A.J. Dillon gets one carry. Do you think that's just the way that they intended it? Are they victims of circumstance? You think they meant to or should have gotten Dillon the ball a little bit more? Dillon, of course, having a breakout game, Mr. Plow, last week, as we dubbed him.
Yeah, I come back to some of the game script and just the game situation stuff. Again, the Packers had that third quarter lull that they've had a couple times this second half of this season. But there were actually a number of instances on that touchdown drive in the fourth quarter where you had Dillon and Aaron Jones together in the backfield. Dillon got, I think, his one carry off of one of those plays, and then a couple of them looked like they were RPOs, and Rodgers threw it out to Jones, who was motioning out of the backfield. And he got some yards after the catch there. So they certainly were, you know, finding ways to get him on the field and get into some interesting looks. I really like that formation. I think that could be something that could be dangerous in the postseason. But yeah, I think just based on the matchups that the Bears were giving them defensively, the fact that the Packers clearly did want to attack the secondary with so many guys out for the Bears and at the cornerback unit, I would chalk it up more to that than necessarily, you know, Dillon just getting relegated to the bench. The snap counts will be real interesting to see how many plays he actually took on the field, because I think it'll be higher than most people would think, at least the percentage of time he was on the field, again, since they only had 44 plays.
Yeah, and you mentioned RPOs, and the broadcast team talked a little bit about that, and just sort of Rodgers having, you know, as many as three options every time he comes to the line. And it really just, like, I don't know, it's a cliche to say, like, oh, he's mastered the offense, but it's just been really, really fun to watch him. You know, again, another cliche is like, oh, the field general steps up to the line. But it's just been really fun to watch him this year just come up to the line and have a bunch of options and really just kind of own defenses more often than not.
Yeah, you see it happen so many times. I mean, you can hear it with the mics on the field when he cans plays. There was only one instance where I think he might have made a mistake in this one. I think it was Barkevious Mingo was kind of playing around near the line of scrimmage, showing blitz and dropping back. I think I think he ended up showing blitz at the end. Rodgers canned from a run to a pass, and then he threw it right into the looked like it was a slant to Adams right in the direction that that Mingo had dropped into coverage in. So that one didn't work out. But for the most part, you know, nobody processes what they're seeing on the field as well as Rodgers. Some of the formations that they were getting and the way that the Bears needed to match coverages. The announcers mentioned this too, that the Packers got into some 3-by-1 formations with their receivers and got that third guy, the guy closest to the line of scrimmage or closest to the offensive line, got open a couple times. I mean, that was MVS on his touchdown. Got matched up against an inside linebacker on a seam. That's going to end poorly for any inside linebacker.
That was Trevathan, I think.
Yep.
You saw Trevathan sort of bite and take that little step inside right as the play started, and you're like, and you could just see, you could almost like feel Rodgers at that moment be like, oh no, we're going MBS over the top. No way.
Yeah, and it was a great design too, because the two outside receivers both ran stop routes and brought the safety in the corner down so that MVS was just one-on-one with no safety help over the top, which again, that's not gonna work. I think the Dominique Daphne touchdown was a similar kind of thing just on the other side of the field where he ran a seam route and was able to get past the linebacker for a touchdown too.
Yeah, my favorite Scooby-Doo character. Oh, kidding. That's not even close to true. Yeah, you mentioned Mingo. I did want to give him props for that play. That was a 3rd-and-1 pass attempt, so they did force a punt there, the Bears did, and it was still close at that point, 21-16. So that was a big play. Let's switch over and talk about the Packers' defense in this game. I have a question for you, and this is kind of an eternal question, but how is this another game in which the defense surrenders less than 20 points, and I still feel mad at Mike Patton? I still come away mad at the man.
It's the third down and fourth down conversions. That's exactly what it is. I think one of the reasons Chicago did not score more than 16 points is some very surprising decisions to kick field goals by Matt Nagy. He did it, I think, the third one to make it 21-16 from 21-13 in the third quarter. I want to say that was a 4th-and-goal from like the 2 or 3 yard line. And so down 8 points to a Packers team that, you know, has been, you know, scoring with ease on your defense. What you're doing going, taking the 3 points there, I don't understand that decision-making process. So I think there were some mistakes from Nagy's game management there, but just the 5 of 6 on 4th down, you know, those are the things I think that stand out in your memory is just frustrating things that keep sustaining drives. And that's one of the things that always kind of sticks with me is if the Packers get one or two more stops on those 4th down opportunities, I don't think we're feeling quite as frustrated with the situation.
Yeah. You know, another thing that I think adds to the length of these drives and to sort of the general frustration is, and this is not something I don't think I've complained about on the show before, but here comes a complaint is, the Packers defense, and I'm particularly thinking of guys like Preston Smith and Za'Darius Smith. It's like once a game, one of them is definitely going to be offsides. And in this game, there was that strip fumble that was taken away by an offsides. I think it was Preston Smith at some point before halftime that ultimately led to of that field goal before the half for the Bears.
Yeah, I think both guys were actually offside and jumped the snap on that play. And Preston was the one who ended up. Yeah, I think Preston got called for it, but then he was also the one who ended up with the falling on the fumble. But Zach Cruz of Packers Wire mentioned it on Twitter that, look, Preston Smith's best pass rushing move is timing the snap count and getting off at the snap and beating the offensive tackle to, you know, beating him into his set. And if he doesn't time it right, either he's slow getting off the ball or he gets called offside. And that's happened to him several times in some pretty poor situations over the last 2 years. Even when he was playing well, you know, really well last year as a pass rusher, he had a couple of instances. I want to say there was one in that Carolina game when the Panthers were driving down in the snow to try to tie the game last year, where he got called to extend that drive down in the red zone. So yeah, that's a, it's certainly something that, you know, is a strategy of his.
Yeah.
And it sucks, but you know, for him to be an effective pass rusher, you almost have to live with some of those once in a while.
Yeah. It's a calculated risk. Here's a note. You know how I love tight ends. Here's a note I took during the game. Cole Kmet. Good. LOL. Graham trying to block. It's basically my assessment of the Bears offense.
Well, Kmet did have a nice game, and it's really, he's really come on the last month or so when the Bears offense has, just as a unit, has improved. And I don't think that's a coincidence. I'm surprised it took them this long for the Bears to really start to use him. But the best, I think the funniest thing to me about Jimmy Graham, not even his blocking, was the fact that the very last play of the game, he gets targeted in the flat on, you know, third and goal or whatever it is from like the 4 yard line. And Jair Alexander's matched up on him 1-on-1 and stands him up at the goal line and holds him out of the end zone to keep the score at 35-16. Like that was just beautiful to me to have that sort of encapsulation of who Jair is and who Jimmy Graham is and just the toughness that Jair plays with and the swagger and everything. That was a fun play to me.
Yeah, that was a great way to end the game too. Nice cap.
Yep. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and ultimately, I mean, down the stretch, you knew it was going to happen. You were waiting for it to happen. A bad pass by Trubisky is intercepted by Amos, which is a little bit of poetic justice. Trubisky kind of throwing up a gift for the Packers there late in the game. So are the Bears going to re-sign him, or what are we thinking here? 10-year you know, contract.
I have no idea what they're going to do. I was on a podcast with Larry Dyer of Bears Talk Underground this week previewing the game, and I asked him what he thinks the best plan would be. And his idea was basically do the Mike Glennon contract all over again. So give him like a 3-year deal worth like $65 million because he's a quarterback. So of course he's got to, you know, get $20 million a year at this point, but basically have all the guaranteed money come in year one and like no signing bonus, so that if he sucks after 2021, cut him, basically have no dead money and you move on. And that actually makes sense to me. I don't think a 1-year deal makes sense for anybody.
Yeah.
And I certainly don't think that the Bears can or will want to invest in him in, you know, a big money, you know, big time contract for a quarterback when he still has yet to demonstrate that he's deserving of it. Yeah. So it's almost got to be that sort of middle ground bridge type of contract that, you know, heavily laden down with incentives and just very front loaded so that they can get out from it pretty easily if, you know, if he ends up turning into a pumpkin like he has so many times.
Do it, Chicago. Give us one more year. Come on. He's just about to turn the corner. Come on, Chicago. I can tell.
Well, you mentioned that Amos pick too. The one thing I wanted to mention too is he's now had picks of Trubisky that have sealed the deal in two of the four games that Amos has played in the Packers-Bears rivalry in green and gold. He had that clincher in the end zone in week one of last year. And now he had the effective dagger in this game too. So it's fun to see Adrian Amos playing really well. It's more fun to see him play really well against the Bears.
Here's an idea for Chicago. They can continue to dip into the Philadelphia well and sign Carson Wentz.
There you go. That'd be a great trade target for Chicago.
Yeah, bring him in. All $37 million or whatever it is. Good Lord.
Yikes.
Oh man, I'm out of topics, man. What a game.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, I'm flipping through the stats here just a little bit, and again, 74 plays to 44 Bears versus Packers.
Yeah.
Bears only outgained the Packers by 50 yards though. So Green Bay averaged 7.2 yards per play. The Bears only had 4.8. But I think the stat that really tells the story is Packers in the red zone 4 for 4. Scoring touchdowns, Bears in the red zone 1 for 5.
Yep.
And that's, you know, that's as much as we get frustrated with Mike Pettine's defense bending between the 20s. That's the definition of the bend but don't break defense, is you find a way to get the stop and prevent the touchdown when they get close to the end zone. And with an offense like the one that the Packers have, you can't just keep kicking field goals. Somebody said that Nagy went full McCarthy in this game by continuing to kick the field goals throughout. So I thought that was an interesting little nugget there.
Yeah, man. I'm proud of these Packers, and I think it bodes well for the postseason here, because I mean, if you're the Bears coming into this game, you want to play ball control football. You want to have more possessions, more plays than the Packers. You want to keep Aaron Rodgers off the field. And for the most part, they did that, and they lost by a lot.
They lost by 19 points. And it's the Packers are showing, and they have shown this year, that they can win in a whole bunch of different ways. They can win some of the close, high scoring games like they did against the Saints. They can blow out lesser teams like they did to Atlanta and Houston. They can win games when they have an off day against an inferior opponent, like against Jacksonville, or they can just come out and blow the doors off of teams like Tennessee.
Yep.
And then you've got a game like today where it seems like a lot of breaks don't go their way, but they still find a way to lock things down and come out with a double digit win.
Yeah.
So I feel really good about this team heading into the postseason. Playoff football is such a matchup driven thing, and so it'll be very interesting to see who ends up coming to Green Bay in the divisional round. If I had my, if I had to bet on it, I would be unhappy to say that I think we're going to see a Tampa Bay Green Bay game at Lambeau in 2 weeks, just based on the matchups of how things are shaping up in the NFC. But that game, I think, would be a very different game at Lambeau.
Oh yeah, in January
than it was earlier in the season in Tampa. So I think that's a totally different environment. It's a everything plays into the Packers' strengths there. So it's just going to be very interesting to see what, who ends up coming up in 2 weeks. And it should be fun to watch. But, the Packers are the number one seed for a reason. This is not a fraudulent 13-3 team like a lot of people accused last year's team of being. And they came out knowing that they needed to win to secure the number one seed. They did it. They won by almost 20 points against a team that was also fighting for its own playoff life. I love the position that this team is in, and their defense is playing some of their best football all season. And that's where you want to be coming into the playoffs.
Yep. Bring on Tampa Bay, man. Let's get old man Tom Brady out of the tanning booth that is Southern Florida in January. Get him up to Lambeau and see how he likes it.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
It is absurd to think about how long Rodgers has played, how many playoff games he has played, and how few of them have been at Lambeau Field.
It's really frustrating, right? Like, I mean, that's something that Rodgers has talked about and talked about this week coming into this game is how important getting that number one seed was to them. They've only had it once before in Rodgers' entire tenure, and it didn't end well because that team basically didn't know how to play defense in 2011.
Yep.
So this is not that team. There are some studs in the secondary. There's a great pass rush. They're figuring out the run defense a little bit. We didn't even talk about Snacks Harrison. Great little ad who had some really nice plays on the interior of the defensive line today. So I think that could be a real big ad for them coming down the stretch here too.
Yep.
Maybe a
Howard Green like ad.
Yeah, I've been thinking the same sort of thing. So we'll see where that goes. But if he can play a little nose and move Kenny Clark outside a little bit to the three tech and let him tee off and rush the passer a little bit more, hell yeah. Like that's a fantastic ad this late in the season with basically zero risk in bringing him in. So I think that was a best case scenario for both parties there that he was able to land in Green Bay. So yeah, this team, they feel different this year in a good way. And the one seed being as big as it is this year, even more so than in past years, I think that's going to come in and end up being real important.
Yeah. And we talked a little bit about Rodgers sort of perhaps locking up the MVP in this game. One more thing I did want to hit on, because I got an interesting text from our friend Alex Patakis. Maybe with the Dolphins result today kind of getting steamrolled, does that bring Matt LaFleur back into coach of the year contention?
That's an interesting point. I hadn't really thought about that. There's some interesting candidates out there, right? I mean, I think you could also see Sean McDermott from Buffalo on the other end in that game, getting some votes. It is surprising to me that LaFleur hasn't gotten more run for coach of the year. And I think it's probably just, he was a victim of the Packers' success last year. If they had maybe gone, 9-7, 10-6, like their point differential suggested, maybe they should have, then you might be talking about, man, he's taken this team, from a fringe playoff contender to a one seed and a dominant team. But because they were the two seed and they were 13-3 last year too, it almost seems like, he matched what they did a year ago, and that's all well and good. But, let's give it to a breakout team like Buffalo or that's where I'm going to guess that it's going to go is to McDermott and Buffalo. But I certainly think that the way he has revitalized this passing game, he absolutely deserves to be in that discussion, as one of the top two or three options. No question.
Yep. All right, Tex, any closing thoughts here as we head into a week off and watching other people play elimination football?
That was going to be my thought, is it's going to be a lot of fun to watch six wild card games next weekend. A pair of triple headers is going to be crazy. And to know that, that our team is sitting there just waiting to host whichever the lowest seed it is that comes out of that weekend, that's a great feeling to have.
Indeed. All right. Well, we're going to close it out. That's going to do it for us here on Two Schlitz to the Wind, our rapid recap pod, the APC pod. Follow us on Twitter at the APC pod. Tex, you are at Tex Western on Twitter. We are going to try to be back in a couple days and do a midweek show. We haven't done one in a while. Alex has been traveling, but we're going to try. That's it. The Packers win. They beat the Bears. That's always a good day. They earn a bye week. Home field advantage. Life's good, man. I feel good. I'm gonna hit the outro music. Let's all kick back. Good. Yeah. Let's finish a brown alcohol, cook the feet up, watch a little Sunday night football.
Here.
Yeah.